Good afternoon, Bay Area. Welcome to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, I visit the home of the legendary Bay Area artist, Mildred Howard, to talk about her exhibition at the Oakland Museum that's getting a lot of buzz. Then an art exhibition at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco that honors and celebrates past queer and trans movements. Today's theme is about looking at the people who show shoulders we stand on. That's all coming up, so stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden, on KALW 91.7 FM. There's been a lot of excitement in the arts community about the Oakland Museum's latest exhibition. It's called Mildred Howard, Poetics of Memory. The works displayed span 5 decades of the iconic multimedia artist's career. Mildred Howard was born in San Francisco and grew up in the East Bay, most of those years in South Berkeley. You might have seen her large brown sculpture that looks like a piece of West African jewelry near Ashby BART station. She created it in honor of her mother, an activist, Mabel Howard. Her mother led a movement in the 1960s for BART tracks to run underground so that they wouldn't divide the predominantly black South Berkeley neighborhood if built above ground. Or maybe you've seen Mildred Howard's bronze locks and keys installation in downtown San Francisco, which pays homage to union leader Harry Bridges. Mildred is an internationally known artist with honorary doctorates, and she's a 2025 Guggenheim Fellow. This is her first exhibition at a major museum. I met with Mildred Howard at her West Oakland home. Here's our discussion. Miss Mildred Howard, hello.
Hi, how are you?
I am ecstatic because I am meeting you. Your exhibition blew me away. And I am in your beautiful home. This, when you think of an artist's home, this is what you think of. And I'm looking at all these beautiful paintings and these beautiful images from like Paris and Monterey Jazz Festival. And I see your art and this red accent wall here with this African art, and there's grapes and wine. I don't know. It just feels like, and I'm sorry, not artist, maker. I feel like I'm in a maker's home. It just feels, I think I see some ancestors, some pictures of ancestors here. It just feels like it's a beautiful feeling.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a beautiful feeling, and I'm really honored to be here.
Thank you.
Yeah, to talk to you. Congratulations.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah!
I'm really excited about the exhibition.
Yeah. What's exciting about it for you?
There are several things that are exciting. It's here in my hometown.
Yeah.
Or in the San Francisco Bay Area is home to me.
Yeah.
Although I've had shows all over.
Yeah.
The country, including internationally, to have something in where you live and where you work is extra special. And especially when it spans a lifetime of work.
The work is really just powerful and beautiful, and it makes you think. I want to go to the beginning, as far as I can go back to the beginning of your life, your parents. Your mom just ran an antique store? Both of them did.
Both of them did. My father was a longshoreman.
Yes.
And he would work in fact, there were several generations of longshoremen in my family. And he would work in the shop with my mom when he got off from work.
Okay. And your mom, Mabel Howard, was an activist. Your father's name was Raleigh?
Yes.
Raleigh Howard. I want to say their names. And your mom did so much incredible work in Berkeley, South Berkeley, which is where they migrated to, during the Great Migration. How did they inspire you as an artist? My grandfather was a longshoreman. How did they inspire you as an artist?
I think by watching them work, because my mom would refinish furniture, help with the repairs of furniture. She took me to antique shops, to museums. She enrolled me in dance classes very young, where I also took arts and craft classes. So that was it. Mm-hmm. And I've always been interested in the creative process. When you're growing up, everything is new. But now that I'm older and in retrospect, I've always been interested in the creative process.
In an interview with Oakley Museum, you described yourself as a maker rather than an artist. So school me, what's the difference?
Well, I don't know if there's a difference. I think it incorporates a variety of things, not just making art, but there's this thing where these titles are placed on what you do and who you are. And I'm more than that. I'm more than just an artist. Mm-hmm. But I guess I shouldn't even say just an artist, but more than an artist.
And that's all part of being creative.
It's part of being creative and part of being engaged in the world.
You mentioned your mother being, or your parents owning an antique shop. And so I know you saw all type of materials. One thing I'm fascinated about artist makers is you all see things that I wouldn't. I'm a different type of artist. I'm a writer. You see things and see art in something that I'm like, that bottle cap? And then you, it's art, and you transform it into something like just magnificent. What draws you to a piece? What draws you to a material?
What draws me to material is the possibility of what it could be. What else could that be? It goes back to the period in art where, this is probably a pipe. Magritte. And I really thought about that when I received my first fellowship to Bellagio Italy, to the Rockefeller Foundation in Bellagio. And I was looking out the window, and there's a piece that he did of a man with a hat on, and it's looking out a window. Mm-hmm. And I felt that kind of understanding of what he was talking about. You really can make art out of almost anything.
Yeah.
Because everything you want to know is right around you. Mm. Everything you need is right there in front of you. You just have to look deeply and understand the possibilities of what could be.
And that's so contrary to the message sometimes our society pushes on us, is that you need to get something else, you need to do more, that's not enough. And where you're saying, like, there is enough because it's right there in front of you.
More is always there.
Yeah. I love the title of this exhibition, Poetics of Memory. What does that mean?
Memory comes in bits and pieces, like a haiku in a way. Mm-hmm. And those fragments, or those bits and pieces, stimulates one's curiosity of what could be.
And that's what, and I was telling you this earlier, one of the things I loved about the exhibition is that it's spaced out. You know, there's smaller pieces, there are really, really large pieces, but there's a lot of space. And your work, you really have to sit with your work as you're taking it in. And I feel like I just have a lot of space to process the work. And then, too, along with that title, it makes you want to sit and just kind of be with it and absorb it and see what strikes you. You know, that's how I felt about your work when I went to the exhibition.
Well, I think that the pieces, because they are so large, they demand space.
Yes.
But within that space, they talk to one another.
Mm.
Not only do they speak to one another, but they speak to the visitor. You're standing in one space and looking in one piece, for example, the red house.
Yes.
With the red apples.
Yes. And the red house is this big glass house.
Yes, it is. It's a large glass, ruby red glass house with a reflecting pool with floating glass apples.
Yes.
And that's the first time that's been shown outside of Tacoma, Washington.
And this house was, this is a glass house, and it was shipped.
It was shipped from Tacoma to the Oakland Museum.
Wow. Shout out to Oakland Museum and whoever shipped it, because that's...
Well, it comes apart.
Okay, but still, I was like, it's big pieces of glass.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And it's laminated glass just for safety purposes.
That piece was deep. I mean, a lot of the pieces, they're all deep, but that piece was really deep because it's something about, you know, we talk about glass houses. And then the color red, and that can symbolize so many different things.
Blackbird in a red sky, a.k.a. Fall of the Bloodhouse. It gives me chills thinking about it today, not always.
And I remember I was reading in an interview, you said sometimes not so good things happen in a house.
Exactly. Yeah. Great things happen. And that's when I add the blackbird, because I think blackbirds are a metaphor for freedom.
Yeah. You know, we're talking about red, this red house, the crimson red apples. What is, and I'm looking, you have a red recliner here. You have this red accent wall. And when I saw you, you looked so beautiful on the opening, and you had on red, you had red lipstick. I said, go ahead, Miss Howard. Why do you love the color red?
Red has so much energy. And I like that. And I need energy to just navigate through this world.
I heard that.
Because it can sometimes be extremely challenging.
Yeah, yeah. It's a powerful color, you know.
Why not red?
Yeah. If you're just joining me, I'm chatting with artist, maker, Mildred Howard. We're in her West Oakland home, and her major exhibition, Mildred Howard Poetics of Memory, is currently running at the Oakland Museum until October 18th, and I highly, highly recommend that you go see it. I love that you put your own image, your own face in some of your work. And I always find it interesting when artists, makers make themselves a subject. I just thought that was really, really cool. And then there's one piece where half your face is face painted. You know, the piece I'm talking about?
The whole face was painted, but it was a profile.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, it was a pro. I love that piece. What does that say when the maker puts themselves as a subject?
Well, I'm here. Okay. I'm available. And artists have been using themselves for years in portraits, paintings, and various aspects. I got that idea from the Art Institute, the Chicago Art Ensemble. The Art Ensemble of Chicago. Okay. That's the right, correct name.
Okay.
And I had gone to see them, and they were musicians who were playing in the neighborhood that I was living at the time, at a place called Mumpinsey. Mm-hmm. And Mumpinsey was a jazz club, a small jazz club in South Berkeley. Okay. And the Art Ensemble of Chicago was playing there. And if you haven't heard them perform or heard their music, I just would say, listen to it.
All right, I'll have to.
And their faces were painted. And I said, I wonder how my face would look painted. And that goes back to the what if I tried this or if I tried that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's where I got that idea from.
I know our producer, Porfirio Rango, one of his favorite pieces in the exhibition is the one with the book and the history book, and there's holes.
That came about by happenstance. I was drilling holes in books to make this totem of 15 feet high books all in a totem.
Oh, wow.
And I was drilling those two. That was the volume, the piece you're speaking of, is the volume of the history of the United States with a few missing parts.
Yes.
And when I opened, for some reason, I opened to the page that is on. And then I took the other one and opened it to the same page. On one section, it talks about those coming through New York, through Ellis Island. And the other part, it talks about the Louisiana Purchase and what was happening to Native Americans, which is contrary to what many see as the United States. Yeah. And I thought about, once again, the Middle Passage.
Because
my folks didn't come that way.
Mine didn't.
And how contradictory history is. And history is for those who write it, those who remember, and those who are telling the story.
Yeah.
So part of what I feel is important as an artist is to tell my story and how I see it.
And one of the many things I love about the exhibition is before you even go to the exhibition, going back to seeing yourself in the image, and I'm thinking about how recently the Treasury Department said they were not going to put Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill. But we could see Mildred Howard on a $100 bill when you walk into the museum, before you even enter the exhibition, when you walk into the onto the grounds of the museum, there is a huge mural of you on a $100 bill. Which I thought was very powerful. And like I said, I heard the news about Harriet Tubman not being on a $20 bill. And I said, to see a black woman on a $100 bill, and then it was on the back of it where it says, "The guy, we trust you have College of Alameda."
They were passing those out at the College of Alameda because I decided
recently?
I'd get a this was like in the late 70s.
Okay.
And I was, I had been making clothes for people for years. And I said, well, I might as well get a degree in pattern making and design.
Mm-hmm.
And so I enrolled with my twins, and I'd take the bus out there or drive my 1963 Volkswagen drop top convertible with the hole in the floor.
Okay.
And they'd sit in the back, and I'd drop them off at the childcare, and then I go to my drafting classes. And they were passing out those $100 bills for something, and I can't remember, but I was in my drafting class, and I had this portfolio of all kinds of things, which included that $100 bill and the photograph of myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I cut it out and put it on the $100 bill, just because, for no reason other than I thought that might be interesting. And that's what I did.
Yeah, it is interesting. It's interesting to see a black woman on a $100 bill.
Well, when you go to other countries, like especially to the Caribbean, you see all kinds of people on money.
True.
Just leave this country.
Got to travel.
Racism is real.
Mm-hmm. So we're in your home. I know South Berkeley is home to you as well. I mean, we're in West Oakland now. And you lived in South Berkeley, and I remember the story when the landlord jacked up your rent to a ridiculous amount and you had to move, and so many of your family's in South Berkeley. And I'm thinking of that glass house in the exhibition. And again, I'm in your beautiful home. What does home mean to you?
To me, it means a safe place. Mm-hmm. Where I can just be myself.
Yeah. And I feel yourself in this place, in this space right now. I'm thinking about your parents. What would your mom and dad say, knowing that you have this big exhibition, like you said, in your hometown?
Both of my parents would be very happy. And my mom was able to attend a lot of my shows mm-hmm. before she passed away. So that was good. My father died when I was 18. And I can remember him coming to my high school graduation and starting to cry just because I had graduated from high school. So if you think, if I'm the youngest of 10 and my parents were, you know, born over 100 years ago, I mean, that's not far from slavery.
Right.
Or emancipation.
Right. And sharecropping and all that stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Last question, what still inspires Mildred Howard?
What inspires me is the everyday people. When I received one of my honorary PhDs, I was sitting in my car, and I talked about the raindrops on my windowsill. And if you look at a drop of water, the image is inverted. And sitting in my car, I saw parents walking with their kids to the childcare, women walking with their baskets filled with food from the food bank, street people. So everything you want to know about the world is right there in front of you. So I am inspired by everyday things, by people, by objects, by something I might hear on the radio, by reading something. That all inspires me. I'd like to just read something that was written a long time ago before I close.
Okay.
Because there's so much being said about social justice. So it says, history will record that the greatest tragedy of this period of social transition was not the strident clamor of bad people, but the appalling silence of good people. Martin Luther King. And that's so true. So I hope that my work speaks to the masses.
Well, it definitely spoke to me. And I know it has spoken to hundreds of people were at the opening. So I know it's speaking to people. And like your work is all around the world. So, yeah. Again, Medra Howard, it has been an honor and a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
That was multimedia artist, maker, Mildred Howard. See her exhibition, Mildred Howard, Poetics of Memory, at the Oakland Museum now until October 18th. And coming up, we go across the bridge and discuss a San Francisco art exhibition that celebrates the past, present, and future of resistance in queer and trans communities. Stay with us. You're listening to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden. We're living in times that will be told in history books for many, many years to come. And while some may be reimagining a better future, there's also people looking to the past for answers. How did our ancestors overcome days that were like these and even worse? This came to mind for me when I saw Conjuring Power, Roots and Futures of Queer and Trans Movements. It's currently running at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco. The multimedia exhibition features works inspired by the history of resistance by trans and queer communities, and it's also a celebration of that resistance as well. Joining me are the exhibition's co-curators. Tina Valentin Aguirre is a documentarian, poet, and director of the Castro LGBTQ Cultural District. And Cato de Robertis is a creative writing professor at San Francisco State University and an award-winning, I just got to say it, super dope writer. That's the best word I can come up with. Welcome, Tina and Cato.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Janae. It's such a joy to be back on your show. And I will always take a super dope. Okay. Thank you.
I know you're a professor, but that's what came up for me was super dope. Both of you two, congratulations on such a beautiful exhibition. It really, really, really is beautiful. And I learned so much, so much history there and just seeing what others see, you know, as far as what's going on today. Where did the idea come from, Conjuring Power? How did you two come together to create this?
Well, I'll jump in and share that Gato was approached by YBCA for an exhibition and thankfully reached out to me regarding possibly just talking about the opportunity. Gato, do you want to share a little bit about that initial moment and what led to us coming together for the show?
Yeah, it actually started way back in January of 2025. So the show really took 15 months altogether to envision and then curate. And I was first approached by YBCA staff because of my work on the Elders Project, which is an oral history project, a national project. I was a Baldwin Emerson Fellow, and I had the great honor of interviewing 30 queer and trans elders of color of the West Coast and creating a collection that led to a book called So Many Stars, An Oral History of Trans, Non-Binary, Genderqueer, and Two-Spirit People of Color. And so that work of collecting these voices of leaders and icons and also everyday heroes who took part in breaking the ground to make our lives more possible today, you know, that work was something that the museum imagined possibly occupying a gallery space, mm-hmm. which was so exciting to me,
yeah.
you know, as a, you know, as a writer and then as an oral historian. It's such a different thing to step into, you know, visual and physical space. And as I started to imagine that possibility of creating a space where archive meets art and history meets imagination and visioning of the future, all revolving around queer and trans culture and ingenuity and solidarity, I couldn't think of a better collaborator than Tina Valentin Aguirre with their vision and artistry and deeply rooted activism. So it was thrilling to collaborate and come up with a vision for Conjuring Power that YBCA, you know, accepted and rolled with. And we worked with so many artists. We commissioned yeah. original art and, you know, I mean, maybe Tina could say more about the Queer Ancestors Project pieces, collaborating with the GLBT Historical Society. But there are all of these different layers that we got to weave into this very collective exhibition, whose vision is to really show the kaleidoscopic, rich, ranging nature of our queer and trans communities, cultures, and possibilities.
Yeah, there definitely was a range and there was so many layers, you know, you saw the diversity within the queer and trans communities. I've noticed futurism as a theme in more exhibitions today and literary anthologies, mm-hmm. Particularly by marginalized groups, and your exhibition, Conjuring Power, Roots and Futures of Queer and Trans Movements. And thinking of that title, I'm thinking about how people seek knowledge and energy from the past as strength for the future. Talk about coming up with that name or that title and what that title means to you both.
Sure.
Tina?
I'll jump in right here, I guess. First off, thank you for having us again here on the show. And I guess I'll back up and add a little bit to what Gatto had shared about the start of the show. Initially, we were given a prompt to possibly consider doing an exhibition centering Harvey Milk. And both Gatto and I agreed that was not necessary, that there are many things that center Harvey Milk. There's an airport terminal. There's, I think there's a stamp. There was at one point a ship. I know that's in contention. And there's an opera. There's many things that center Harvey Milk. And it kind of takes up a lot of space in terms of queer and trans culture. And we both agreed that we wanted something that was more about us as queer and trans folks who mostly are underrepresented in the arts and in culture and in politics. I work with the Castro LGBTQ Cultural District, and we center lesbians and queer women, trans folks, and LGBTQ people of color, because we observe racial, gender, and class equity frameworks. And what I brought to this conversation, and Gatto and I were exactly on the same page, was that these times, they're fraught with tension and anxiety in terms of the resurgence of fascism, and how we both work with intergenerational artists and community members. I've been mentored by my elders. At this point, I am an elder. Gatto's a professor to college students, and I am a teaching artist with Queer Ancestors Project. Queer Ancestors Project is a local organization in San Francisco that serves transitional age queer and trans youth, mostly youth of color. Mm-hmm. And there's two art projects that they do. One is block printmaking. It's a 10-week generative workshop series. And then there's another one that's a 10-week writing workshop series. I'm a teaching artist for both of them. And I go in and share art. I'm a movie maker and producer and writer and stories really about community building. And what I'm finding is that all of us are hungry and eager to just reconnect with the dots in terms of where we've been mm-hmm. in order to understand where what's happening and where we need to go. I'll also share, I was mentored by many people, but one of them is Osa Hidalgo de la Riva, PhD, Dr. Osa Bear, who has done, is a poet and a filmmaker, Chicana, feminist. And she very much, she's she lives in Santa Cruz and is somewhat of a brown hippie who okay. Transcends space and time. And talking with her is always kind of an exercise before, like, you know, hyperlinks and the internet. We met in the 80s and in the early 90s. We would talk in ways that were like, oh, we're going back in time. Oh, we're in the future. Oh, we're in a different space. And it really stayed with me. It really works for me in terms of acknowledging that us as queer and trans folks, we transcend moments that we that we as queer and trans folks, not only have we been here the whole time and will we always be there, there's also some of us who are really special in terms of being artists, visionaries, acting as mentors and teachers and leaders, and that those of us who do that, play those roles, often we are tapped to sort of make sure that others understand that we are part of a continuum and that we do transcend space and time. Conjuring Power for us was a way to engage with what is happening at the moment, but also to say it is not just of the moment, that it's within us as humans that we are good and we are bad, but also us as queer and trans folks, we and especially underrepresented queer and trans folks, that we were almost always likely to experience discrimination and exclusion. What does that mean to us when we want to move past just thriving to a place of, or rather than just surviving, but also to thriving, but also that some of us see fabulosity and grandeur in what we need to do.
And that's one of the things I liked about the exhibit is, again, it's honoring the history, but also to celebrating the people, celebrating the resistance, celebrating the culture and the cultures within the culture as well. And I'm looking at there was some artists there's multiple artists in the exhibition, but some names I saw several times, like Esther Hernandez, is it Serge Gay Jr.? Mm-hmm. Tanya, and how do you pronounce Tanya's last name?
Wisherath, Tanya Wisherath.
Tanya mm-hmm. Wisherath with that bomb mural, that mural that just took my breath away. Crystal Mason, and again, there's other artists. What did these artists deliver in what you were looking for?
So we were incredibly fortunate to work with these very, very gifted and visionary queer artists. Esther Hernandez's iconic Nasty Liberty is this rendering of the Statue of Liberty as a kind of tatted up graffitiing the word resist. Yeah. And it is a painting that we decided to have blown up to sort of mural wall size in the anteroom. So when you walk in,
that's the first piece you see.
Yeah, the first piece you see, this iconic piece by the great Esther Hernandez, mm-hmm. you know, that is like, we are here on the margins and we call to resist. We know that there is an urgency in the now. We also know that this urgency to create space for justice, survival possibility is of today, but also not new. That our queer and trans communities, including queer and trans communities of color, have always, you know, innovated to create the space that we needed in a world that was, you know, sort of institutionally against our existence. And we've done it in, you know, magical and powerful ways. We can draw on those roots and we can vision into the futures. So when you walk past that piece, then you walk in and there's a section of this exhibit that is sort of loosely organized as the roots. So it's like honoring past and legacy, art and archive. And you walk through that hallway, the walls are green. And then you tip from there into the visions area, Serge Gay Jr. and Tanya Wisharath were each commissioned to do a significant amount of artwork. Serge Gay Jr., among other things, created beautiful collages out of photographs from the GLBT Historical Society's collection that really honor a lot of the movement work that, you know, happened in queer and trans communities. So like marches and resistance events, and all of these are kind of created into an artistically rendered collage.
Yeah, they're very unique for people. Yeah. They're very unique collages.
And we're so lucky to have had his eyes on them. And then Tanya Wisharath just created these beautiful pieces, Nest of Elders 1 and 2, which are the faces of the elders whose oral histories from my oral history project are in audio stations, where people can have this very interactive experience of putting on headphones and listening to clips of these, you know, groundbreaking, trailblazing elders of color talking about, you know, what it was to be queer in childhood, thoughts for younger generations, art and activism, visions for the future. And then above you, as you're listening and with these headphones, you can see the artistic renderings of their faces.
Yeah, it's almost like a cloud. It's almost like a cloud of these.
It's like a cloud. Yeah, when we talked about it, we said it's kind of like a nest. And I said, it's kind of like a nest of elders. And I had had my mind blown so much sitting in people's kitchens and living rooms, you know, recording their stories and bearing witness to them, that it was so moving to see them in this kind of cloud or nest of, like, either they're themselves and they're individuals, but they're also interconnected, which is what is true and beautiful about our communities, right? We are each wholly and entirely, dazzlingly ourselves, and we are also interconnected. And so those renderings are from Tanya. And then we invited each of them to create original art for the visions area. And we said to each of them, please, like, basically run wild with this prompt of, like, what do you think we need to create our best queer and trans futures? And so you brought up sort of Afrofuturism, Janae. You said, like, futurism, but I think, like, Afrofuturism in the literary world has really led the charge. In a beautiful way, from, like, our great master grandmama, you know, Octavia Butler onward, all of this brilliance drawing on the realities of the past to vision the future. Serge Gay Jr., as a Black Haitian American artist, I think is very actively drawing on Afrofuturism in his brilliant
work. I definitely
did. You
that
feel
up.
That
I
in his pieces?
I definitely felt that. I love the way how that mural, you see Serge's collage in Tanya's. Yes. And Tanya's mural. And because at first I thought it was one piece, and I was like, oh, it's separate.
Yes. So Serge created his own large, you know, visionary paintings of visions for the future rooted in Afrofuturism and imagination. And then Tanya had this vision of working with spores and the notion of a spore network.
Wow.
It's a spore network cut out of paper, a mural size. And it's hard to explain it. Now, it's only up there until August 23rd. And when it comes down, it cannot be shown again because the paper will not survive being taken down. It is temporal art. So this is the time to witness
that. When I saw that piece, that mural, I was so moved. And so I really encourage everyone to see it. And I was talking to the security guard there, and he said it took them a long time to put it up because it's so delicate. So
it's enormous and delicate and intricate.
It takes up two walls. Yes,
and it's a symbol of the solidarity movement work that we have always done and will always do as queer and trans and marginalized people. And a lot of it is invisible labor underground, like other sport networks. And it goes and goes and goes. And then in those futures we have envisioned, it bursts to the surface in this kind of luminous explosion of light and color. And that is what she wanted to create. Now, she, as an artist, she bought a pack of 200 X-Acto knives and went through all of them creating that. And then she collaborated with Serge, and they sort of put their genius minds together, and he created this piece that is integrated underneath in the spores, a painting of people's bodies kind of moving together in these very moving ways.
Yeah, and I didn't know how that, I didn't know if it was I was thinking slave ship. I was thinking I didn't know, you know, and then I was thinking like dancing and, you know, I didn't know.
There's room for imagining
for
our
imagination.
Way into it.
I think incubation, we incubate during periods of time. Well, I like to look at it as, you know, we go through cycles where we mobilize, we act up, we make change, we show up in the streets against cycles of oppression. And but then there are also times when we are living our lives and creating and enjoying sharing our beauty and our magic with each other. And for us, what we saw was that this is all happening kind of at the same time. We just enter in at different points. Actually, the show is separated in different areas, but if you notice, there are beaded entries into each area.
Oh, I cannot tell you all how many times I walked through those beaded curtains.
Those beaded curtains are meant to be a little trippy entree to show that, yes, you can go through the show using a chronological kind of trajectory, but you can also afterward maybe say, you know what, I want to go back to this moment, or I want to go back to this place. That is because we, as people doing this, experiencing this, we tap into, you know, our past, our ancestors, and we look to the future. We sometimes, I think we're visited by some of people from the future to say, hey, get out of this moment here. Get out of thinking that this is new, you're alone, you're isolated. We are part of something more.
I love the beaded curtain too, because that's also for me the celebration as well, because it is festive. I'm thinking like back in the 70s with parties and stuff, and people would have beaded curtains, and it's so pretty. And it was so quiet in the gallery hall. So when you would walk through the beaded curtains, it made this really, really beautiful noise, beautiful sound. For our listeners,
did you see the back area too? I'm sorry.
Oh yeah.
Did you see the back area too?
We were all over. Oh yeah, we saw everything. All right, let me remind people who you are for people that's just tuning in. I'm chatting with Tina Valentin Aguirre and Cotto de Oro-Ortiz. They both curated the art exhibition Conjuring Power, Roots and Futures of Queer and Trans Movements, and is currently running at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco until August 23rd. And we highly, highly recommend that you all check it out. I want to play a clip, Carlo, from the Elders Project, because you have these great audio stories that are there. And it was hard for me to walk away from them because they were so good and so engaging. But there's so much to think about when you listen to these stories. So here's a clip from trans activist Donna Persona, who has been on the show, and she gives advice to trans and gender nonconforming youth.
Don't get caught up in approval. Don't get caught up in, does that one like me? Are they okay with what they see? Because when you do that, then you're giving them some power over you.
I wanted to know, because
that's my auntie.
Donna.
She's my auntie. Yeah, Donna's one of my aunties.
Donna is fabulous, and again, she's been on the show, and I really enjoy talking to her, and I learned so much from her too. So to both of you, Tina and Cotto, you know, there's space in this exhibit for young people. You have a curriculum, you have questions for them. How have young people reacted to this exhibit? Have you got any word on how the youths
good question. What about the youths? You know, because we got the elders up there. Well, I will say also that's been one of the beautiful things about the project is how we integrated in the Queer Ancestors Project pieces, because Queer Ancestors Project artists are young, transitional age, 18 to 26-year-old queer and trans youth who study queer and trans history and then create prints inspired by that. And we went through hundreds of prints in their archives. And we're really grateful to collaborate with Katie Gilmartin of the project to draw in and choose 25 prints that are up and framed as well and integrated into the show. So that's one way we've worked with youth, is by really uplifting and highlighting youth artistic creations as an integral part of what's living in the gallery. And then also, you know, it's been incredibly moving to hear from young people about how, you know, how this exhibit has spoken to them. I mean, across the board, but I would say particularly with queer and trans youth. I mean, I've just had so many experiences on opening night. A friend brought somebody who they're kind of a madrina to, who is this young teenage Black trans girl. And it was so, she was, her face was just so incredibly lit up. And she was like, I'm just seeing all of these things here and it's speaking to me so deeply. And I was able to walk her over to the, you know, to the audio stations and say, here are some Black trans women you could listen to, like listen to Sharon Grayson. She already loves you. And it was just this incredibly moving thing. You know, and then just on Saturday, I was there to lead a tour for a nonprofit and happened on a couple of young women who were in the room for dreaming, which is the final part of the show, which is a room where there is a video that we commissioned from the artist Crystal Mason. That's an invitation into dreaming your own relationship to your own power, so that this show is not just something where you can go and observe art, but it's really a crucible for your own igniting and awakening and connection to your own sources of power within yourself. And there's papers on a table where people can write. And I found these young women and they're just like really thinking and looking around and writing on the papers, and you can hang them on the wall. And I got to have this lovely conversation with them. So it has been really moving to see how it's, and how many youth have said to me, you know, there's so much history in here that I didn't get to receive anywhere else. And it's really opened that up for me in a way that is creative.
Yeah, and I didn't, like, I know I learned so much. Like, I didn't know there was a riot in L.A. This was before Stonewall.
Yes!
10 years. Cooper's Donuts. Cooper's
Donuts.
I didn't know about that. I didn't know about, it kind of was familiar to me, but the group of lesbians, I think, and they would, like, burn things or eat fire. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What were their names again? I can't remember their names. Forgive me.
Well, I know we sent her the Lesbian Avengers.
Yes, the Lesbian Avengers. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, it was the Lesbian Avengers. I love their icon, their logo has a bomb, because they were sort of like metaphorically the grenade throwers in activism, especially in the 90s.
Okay.
And they're fabulous. We sent her all forms of activism and community building, really, because we acknowledge that we need all of it right now. That some of us, there's also, if you look at some of the collages, there's photos that we included. I went through ephemera and photos at the Historical Society for months, actually for a book that the Castro LGBTQ Cultural District published last year on the Castro.
Mm-hmm.
And along the way, I was putting stuff aside for the show. And some of the photos were of Gay Liberation Front organizers in the Bay Area, Bay Area Gay Liberation.
Okay.
And those photos, they show people in small spaces, they're on the floor, you could tell they're kind of arguing, it's probably sweaty and hot. And that it really shows how, like, we use all tactics, we use all strategies. And to get there, we have to come together and get to a place of commonality. And maybe we don't all, you know, march. Maybe we don't all want to go to, like, state and city, like, hearings where we give testimony. Maybe we do, maybe some of us are creating art. People like me and Caro, we kind of do all the above. Or let's say, like, my day job with the district, it includes policy making and organizing across the state. Coalition building is something that we really brought to this. And I'll just share, for me, that came out of my mentors. When I got to San Francisco in the late 80s, 1987, I was mentored by people who participated in Gay and Lesbian Latinos Alliance, GALA. And they partnered with groups like the Third World Advisory Task Force, Third World Organizers, Radical Lesbians. And they taught those of us who came in, they were from more the 60s and 70s. They taught those of us who came in the 80s and mobilized us for the AIDS movement and cancer and crack and responding to poverty during those times. And then I think what our roles are in many ways is to say, these are the stories of our people. These are the ways that we flourish and rejoice. You are amongst us. You are amongst all of us as your people. We can do this. Not only can we get through this moment, we are better than the strife that we are experiencing right now.
Yeah.
And where's the balance to, and like I said, I pinpointed some things for me where I see celebration. But for you all, where do you see the celebration in this resistance, the celebration, you know, of these, of queer and trans folks? Where do you see that? Or where can people go to the exhibition and see that?
You know, we're doing a panel next Wednesday where you can rejoice with us in person.
Okay, like, let folks know about us.
Yeah, that is next Wednesday, the 19th at 6 p.m. at Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. And Gato and myself and Serge and Tanya and Crystal are all going to be there. Gato is facilitating, and it's going to be awesome. It's free as well. So nice. That's going to be great.
Go ahead.
I'll add one last thing. For me, what I am so happy about is our opening night, we had 1,200 plus people show up.
Wow.
And this was a lot of people who, they're activists, they're organizers, they're in it, right? And they're like, how were you able to do this under such duress? And I think what Gato and I are clear on is, not only is it important that during times of duress, it's actually always important that we lead with this artistry, that we have grandeur.
So last question, we have a minute. You have that section in the back, that room, and one of the questions posted is, what do you need to dream? So we have about 50 seconds. What do you need to dream for, you know, whether it's for a better future or for just for the present? What do you need to dream?
We need joy, we need courage, community, imagination, connection, and to be our whole fabulous selves. For those of us who are queer and trans, to be as queer and trans as F.
I'll add to that, and to continue and to carry on, Tina.
15 seconds.
I'll say love. Like I have a husband, Bill Jennings, and Gato has loved ones. And we share our love. And I'd say love is the other big ingredient that's needed.
Well, again, congratulations to you both. It's a great exhibition. And I really highly encourage people to check it out before it ends on August 23rd. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Tina Valentin Aguirre and Cato de Robertis are co-curators of Conjuring Power, Roots and Futures of Queer and Trans Movements. And you can catch that at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco until August 23rd. That's all the time we have for the Sights and Sound Show with me, Janae Darton. Thank you to our show producer, Porfirio Rangel, and our board operator, Marla Davies. And congrats to Marla for being inducted into the Bay Area Radio Hall of Fame. Yay! And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. We'll have another great show for you right here next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Until then, be good to yourselves and to each other, and be fabulous. I'm going to borrow that from the exhibition, all right?